When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Hi, Christy.
Hi, Will.
How are you?
I'm so good.
What are you doing today?
I'm going to sit next to you and just be really excited.
Well, me too, because you know why?
Why?
Do you know why?
I do know why.
Do you know why?
Yes.
Ask me why.
Why?
Because one of my favorite people in the world is coming here today, and
it's the Kevin Conroy.
She jumped in. It's Kevin Conroy. I'm too excited. It's Kevin Conroy, who is, one of my favorite people and has been Batman for 30 years. That is not an exaggeration.
Yep.
30 years, mm-hmm. And he's coming to talk to us today on I Hear Voices. I can't wait.
I hear voices.
This is very much.
Speaking of voices.
I hear voices and there's no one there.
Oh, is this a song? That should be our intro.
You don't understand. So if you want to see people go insane at a convention.
Oh boy.
Kevin, we will be sitting on a panel, and Kevin Conroy will start to sing, I Feel Blue.
Am I blue? Am I blue? Yeah, they like that.
I like that.
There was a time I was her only one. Now I'm the sad and lonely one. Lonely.
Dang.
And so
that's gorgeous.
Sung that as Batman on the Batman the Animated Series. Ugh. And so he will hit the first note and you will see hundreds of people go insane to see this. And normally he's sitting next to the people who played Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, doesn't matter, all eyes, Kevin Conroy, and he just owns the stage. It is absolutely
insane.
That's
so nice.
We are, of course,
sitting
here with Kevin Conroy.
Look at that love that Will.
Of course it's love.
Will loves you so much. He's mentioned you.
We've worked together for 22 years.
When did we start? 97.
97? 25 years?
25 years. 97 we started. And it was my first ever animated series. And you took me under your wing from day one, and you didn't have to. You easily could have been one of those actors, but this is why we keep talking about the voiceover world compared to the on-camera world.
Oh, yeah.
Because I walked into that room, I was as frightened as I've ever been in my life. I'd never done an animated series, and now I've been cast as Batman in Batman Beyond with Andre Romano directing, Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Glenn Murakami, all these incredible people involved. And you're sitting there going, what am I going to do? And I'm sitting next to Kevin Conroy, who has been Batman forever. He easily could have been, who are you, kid? What are you doing here? But he wasn't.
Yeah, what are you doing here, kid?
Exactly.
Get out of my way.
But he didn't. He opened his arms. He taught me how to sit behind the microphone, how to
work
out your don't slouch.
Wait. I was going to say, how did you teach him? Do you remember meeting him?
There's certain tricks in the sound room that when you come from the outside, you don't understand that, you know, every noise in the room is being recorded. And when other people are acting, because Warner Brothers likes to get all the cast together.
Correct. Okay.
So you're not working in a vacuum. You're working, it's like recording a play. Yeah. So all these other people are in the same room together. All those mics are live. Mm-hmm. So every time you turn a page, it can destroy someone else's performance.
Oh my gosh.
Someone can
so
give a great
angry.
Take and then someone rustles a page over there and their take has to be done again.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories of anybody ruining a take that was like some of your best work kind of thing? Has anyone ruined your performance?
This is what Christy
who
likes
made
to
that
ask.
Noise?
Exactly. This is what Christy likes to ask us. So who do you hate?
No, let's get the tea.
Who really screwed up? No, but then, so there's an art to turning the page by picking up the entire page and moving it over and laying it down rather sure. than turning it. You do it yeah. that way without making any noise. Yeah.
But you taught me
so
all
that. So
someone's
just got to show you, it's just basics like that.
Right.
So Will had never been in a sound studio like
no.
that before,
okay.
ever. So he just needed someone to
had,
show him that
did
stuff.
Did you know his work from other things he was doing?
No,
or what was your
not.
First impression of Will?
A great guy.
Yeah.
Who I knew came from a very successful show
uh-huh.
that I had never seen.
Mm-hmm. Boy Meets
World. I'm just not that much of a TV. I'm not a TV junkie.
You also were in our demographic, if we're
I was in your demographic.
Yeah, if you're honest.
And but I knew he'd done a successful show, and I wasn't sure. You know, actors are people. There are nice
sometimes,
ones.
Sometimes, if you feed them
there are nice
the right
ones,
food.
And there are not such nice ones.
Yeah.
You know, there are generous ones and selfish ones.
Yeah.
yeah.
There
yeah.
are people you want to work with, and there are pricks you just want to avoid.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did I just use a bad word?
That's okay. We can bleep it.
I love
it's
that.
Not that bad.
It's
no.
not that bad.
No, it's not.
Most kids have heard that by this point.
But so when you're dealing with someone who came from a successful show, you don't know what you're going to be dealing with. You know?
Sure.
So I didn't know. I thought, oh, is he going to come in with a lot of attitude? You know, and he didn't. He came in ready to work,
he was
open,
terrified,
giving, generous. You know, I should have known because Andrea Romano, who cast the show,
she's my sister, by the way.
Oh, because they're both Romanos.
Are you a Romano?
Yeah.
I wish. I still haven't met her. My last name is Romano, yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I wonder if you're related somehow.
I kind of do. I think I've actually messaged
her. Are you related
her.
To Reno Romano?
Oh, good question.
I want to work with all these wonderful women.
Reno's another
Batman. Voice actor.
Yeah, it's another Batman.
Oh,
too.
It's a Reno is a man.
Yes.
Yeah. And I said it was a woman. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, Reno's a great guy.
But anyway, she always brings people together who are just generous, fun, creative. Not a lot of judgment, not a lot of attitude, just ready to play.
Yeah.
That's what all the yeah. bookings have always been like for 30 years.
Yeah. I mean,
just
oh my goodness.
No
That's
attitude.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Well, it is lucky, but it's not lucky. It's Andrea.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I mean? There's more of a science to it, I think, than just luck.
Okay.
She knows what to look for in people, and she brings
yeah.
wonderful people together.
She so. Also, so here's a question for you, because one of the things that Andrea, I always noticed, did was... She cares about the acting. That's all it's all about. It's just get the best actor you can for the role. However, at the same time, she's turned more quote unquote on camera actors into voiceover actors than anybody else I've ever seen. I'd never done a voiceover role before. I now consider myself more of a voiceover actor than I do an on camera actor. Will Wheaton. You know, there's a giant group of us who look at Andrea and essentially say, we were one thing in this industry. And then you brought us in to a whole nother side. And now we consider ourselves a whole different thing.
Right.
So there's a strangeness where, yes, she wants to get the best actor possible, but then she takes that actor and brings them into this world. And it's like, now you're something else. And there's something really, I mean, well, I mean, you
yeah,
started
he
on
started.
Stage, didn't you?
I was a New York actor, much like you.
You're Juilliard trained as well,
Juilliard,
sir.
Yes.
You know, they rejected me.
The classics.
Did they?
They
did
rejected
they really
me. Okay, so I.
More fools them.
Well,
yes.
That's okay. I totally see it. So I was infatuated. My mom used to call it cross training, but she was like, yeah, let's do the dancing. Let's go to a School of American Ballet. I got kicked out of there. And I went to performing arts school right there by the Fame School. I went to professional children's school. Anyway, long story short, I auditioned. I trained for about a year to be a coloratura soprano in the pre-college Juilliard program. I was not accepted into the program. They said I had, because I was a Broadway kid, so I did a lot of Broadway belting. It turns out I had too many bad habits for Juilliard.
Really?
But my God, is Juilliard amazing. And anyone that's done Juilliard training has a lot of respect
from me. It's grueling. I mean, it's a grueling experience.
For somebody who doesn't know anything about Juilliard, is it a four-year program? Is it a two-year program?
Well, it can be many things.
There's the pre-college prep.
There are
for
a lot of different
of
programs you can do.
What did
I
you
did
do?
I did the four-year
you
program.
You did four-year. Okay.
I was 17. I'd left high school early. I was the youngest one in the school when I went in. But I was 6'2", and I had a deep voice.
Yeah.
No one really thought about it, you know, because I just fit right in. But so pretty, I really wanted to
decent looking guy, too, if we're honest with each other. Nah, was, oh, come on. Nah, oh, come on.
Pimply,
forget yeah. about forget about how you're still a hugely attractive man. Nah, you would show me pictures of yourself back in the day.
I think he's dashing.
It was was incredible. I mean, you're, let's be honest.
He's a
pretty damn good looking guy.
God, I'm coming back here.
But it's true.
I mean, like this company.
But the whole package when it comes to, especially back in the day, what you're looking for as an actor. Yeah. I mean, commanding the presence, the talent. I mean.
But so I went for the 4-year program because I wanted to get a BFA, which involved doing academics on the side.
Oh, where did you do the academics?
On the fourth floor.
Oh, so it's through Juilliard. Yeah. But
and they
different.
Had special teachers who would come in. And there'd be, you know, you're dealing with people in SAB, School of American Ballet.
Yes, that's
Ballet,
where I went. I got kicked
American
out of there.
And the American Opera Center. I mean, all these incredibly, you know, stars of their generation with dance and singing and acting. You know, Kevin Kline's in your English class, that kind of stuff. And you're talking about, you know, Dickens or something. You're studying English literature with people who are really thinking about what they're going to have to perform that night,
yes.
you know, what they're going to present.
That was actually my high school experience, too.
I mean, it's all about performance. It's all performance-oriented. So these academic classes were such an afterthought.
They were jokes.
They were kind of a joke. They were a joke.
Wow. Yeah, understandably.
That everyone went to just to, you know, get the basic training so we could get a BFA. Because you were spending, you know, 12, 14, 16 hours a day in
performing,
fencing, dance, movement, voice, diction, acting classes, poetry classes, French mass classes.
It's a job. It's like a full-time
massive.
Job.
And for each one of those classes, you have to perform. It's all performance-based.
Oh, geez.
So you're doing a French mass class.
You can fence?
And I...
You know how to fence? Oh, my gosh. Did you know that?
I did not know
I
that.
I was trained by B.H. Barry. The, you know, there's...
Like Zorro?
I don't know.
Like Zorro?
He's like the stage fighting, theater stage fighting guy.
Really?
He's a British, wonderful stage fighting guy. But Pierre Lefebvre taught me French mass.
Now, see, that name I know.
And I was in that class with Robin Williams. So my presentation, I did a scene from Peter Pan, the fight between Captain Hook and Peter Pan.
Okay.
As the characters. And we staged a fight. And who did I do it with? Harriet Harris.
Was that
you know Harriet? A wonderful character actress.
Now, wait, were you Peter or were you Hook? You were Hook. Okay, you were the bad guy.
Because of his height.
And my voice.
And his voice.
That's what did it. It was
but
the
you
voice.
Present these pieces, and you know, it takes weeks to work on these things and present them and then get judged by everybody.
Oh, torn down,
so,
I bet.
Oh, the judgment was
the
incredible.
The criticism is
But then in poetry class, you're doing, you know, you're preparing poetry to have judged, and it's grueling. It's a grueling experience. So you don't have time to prepare academics.
So I'm actually really curious about this because in speaking to somebody who's gone to Juilliard, I don't think I really have had that interaction. Did you want to leave at any point just to do traditional industry work? Or did anyone else want to just stop the grueling
pace? That's such a good question. I was scared. I always wondered if I should leave and just start acting.
Okay. Hmm.
Wouldn't you learn more by just doing?
Yeah.
Because the first 2 years are really the training there. The second 2 years are all performance-based.
Okay.
Like pieces.
It's all application of what you've learned. But the thought of swimming in the deep pool at the age of 18, 19, it scared me. I wanted to stay in the school.
Now, did you go to become an actor? Did you go to become a singer? Did you go to become...
Oh, actor.
It was an actor, okay. Now, there's one thing. So going back a little bit earlier in your life, there's one thing that I'm the only one at this table that knows... which is all three of us are from Connecticut.
Ah!
Are you from Connecticut?
Are you from Connecticut?
Yeah.
Are you from Connecticut?
Of course I'm from Connecticut. How often
no,
do we
just
have to
saying,
talk
I
about
was doing a I was doing a bit.
You're doing a shtick?
Are you
doing
from a Connecticut? Bit?
He's from Hartford.
I'm from, I was born in Hartford. I'm from a town in Avon. And you
I'm
are from
Milford.
Milford.
From Milford?
Yeah. Where are you from?
Westport.
Oh, fancy guy.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know Connecticut, we are from three different sides of Connecticut, yet still a half hour away from each other.
What kind of Connecticuts are we all from? What kind of Connecticut is Avon, or was it?
Avon, Connecticut is exactly as it sounds. It was
farmland to me.
No, it was a small town, but it was upper middle class and you know, very hoity-toity kind of people. And we were not that family, but I mean, there were kids in high school that drove the BMWs and all that kind of stuff. Again, not our family, but that's what it was like. So it was what you would expect a place that sounds like Avon, Connecticut would be.
Avon Country Day School.
Yeah, there were the Avon Country Clubs. And I went to a public high school. So
yeah.
I went to Avon High because I had to audition. I was swimming in the deep end. I never was trained. So I started acting at a very young age and I would take the bus. It was 3 hours from Farmington to New York. Mm-hmm. And I would do that once or twice a week for auditions to be told. You'd walk in, they go, no, you don't have red hair. And you go, thank you. And you turn around and you walk out. And at 12, I was walking around New York City in the 80s and the bus would drop you off at Port Authority. My manager was supposed to meet me there. Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't. And I would walk to my audition and there was no better way to grow up. I never had a problem. Nobody ever accosted me. I knew the homeless people in Port Authority by name, where I would literally get off the bus and somebody would go, I break a leg today, Will. And I go, thanks, Harvey. And I'd walk through it was a great experience for me. It really made me grow up.
What an interesting time, yeah.
But, and then I did my first show in New York at Unitel Studio at 55th and 9th.
What was your first show? What?
Don't Just Sit There on Nickelodeon.
Oh, of course. I know that show.
So that was my first one. That was 88, 89. But the idea of being trained to do it, I never did, and I think I suffered because of that. I mean, obviously, if you had to go back and do it again, knowing your success, would you just jump into the deep end, or would you go back to Juilliard again?
No, I learned an awful lot.
That's what I mean. Yeah,
I was emotionally very immature at 17. I had a lot to learn. The city was overwhelming. Everything about the experience was overwhelming. My first job in the city was as a mailman, as a mail carrier.
Really?
Delivering the mail for a private mail service. When I was 17.
On a bike, walking? How are you doing it?
I had a cart, a push cart. Guys on 6th Avenue you see pushing the...
Yeah, did you have your beat? Wow.
It was like a private business mail service. It was before FedEx and that stuff. This is in 73. And so they would all subscribe to this airline mail service, basically. The mail room was underneath Grand Central.
Uh-huh.
So you'd come in. I'd come in on the morning train from Connecticut at like 5 a.m. and go to the mail room and start sorting all the mail. And all the guys in there were wonderful. They were all these New York, tough, blue collar, young men. Real characters, like a sitcom.
Yeah.
And I went to go to my Juilliard audition from that mail room.
Oh, jeez.
And they were so, they used to call me Shakespeare because I was always working on Shakespeare and I was working on my pieces and stuff. They go, go for it, Shakespeare, go for it. You got to get in there.
Oh.
And the day I got my acceptance, they all picked me up in the air and they carried me out and they got me drunk at a local Irish bar. It was such a wonderful New York moment.
Wow.
They just adopted this kid,
And you got it in 73.
That was
73?
73.
Wow.
So that was a job that you commuted to before you heard about Juilliard. So you were kind of already going into New York. Right. Interesting.
I was going to have to get a scholarship to go. So I had to save up as much money as I could.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Now, what did you want to do? You got to pick your career from Juilliard. You could be a film star. You could be a TV star. You could be on Broadway. What would you do?
You're both much younger than me. It was different in the 70s.
Right.
There was still a theater that you could make a living in.
Oh, make a living. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you could train to be a classical
actor.
Yeah. I used to go to the American Shakespeare Festival
at
Stratford in Connecticut.
Sure,
see the plays there. I saw...
They were brilliant, weren't they?
Oh.
Didn't it burn down recently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But you would see these actors who did these amazing performances and were making a wonderful living at the theater.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist anymore,
anymore.
I mean, you have to supplement your income with other things. You have to.
Yeah.
Yes, sponsored content.
That's the new thing we're talking about.
Sponsor.
Speaking of that, this section of Kevin Conroy has been brought to you by Amex.
No. Yeah. Kevin, I hate to keep integrating, but I'm just so impressed by you that I'm trying to I need to tell you certain things. So because we're all from Connecticut, right?
Yeah.
The worst audition I've ever had in my life was for that Stratford Shakespeare.
Oh, really?
I was always this Disney kid. I did a bunch of Disney shows growing up. But I did actually start in theater. I was Mary Fagan, original Mary Fagan in Parade. With Jason Robert Brown and Hal Prince and all that. And I was just a theater kid. And then Disney kind of plucked me into LA. And then I sort of did
that. That was a wonderful. You had the New York production?
Yes. The one that got closed down from Livent. Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it was amazing to be a part of that. So
sure.
Theater was how I started and going back and forth as a kid from Connecticut to New York. So that's why I really resonate with that part of your story. But I will also say, worst choice of my life was thinking that I could just try to be auditioning for Romeo and Juliet.
Now I can do Shakespeare.
Yeah, I was like, all of a sudden, my mom's like, go for it. I was like, okay. I was literally standing there like this, just terrified. Oh. Couldn't get through one like stanza or whatever it was. Just bombed. Shakespeare's not for me. Oh. I leave it to the greats.
Well, I mean, I think that brings it to kind of an interesting point in the conversation where we're going to get into VO because it's about VO, but it seems like acting itself has changed, where there doesn't seem to be the discipline that there once was. There isn't the study of acting as a craft as much anymore. And it's more, I've got talent, it's natural, just hire me to be myself. And are you seeing that more? Do you see that more and more with the generations coming up where it's like, which is why it seems like everything we're watching, whether it's television or film, everybody's British because they still study the craft of acting. Whereas we're more about being celebrities, they're still about being actors.
Acting is the art of communication, right? Mm-hmm. It's communicating, it's telling stories. It's as old as the caveman. It's telling stories and elevating it to an art form. And the more intimate you can make that story, the more personal, the more at risk you can make it for you, the more compelling it is.
Sure.
People can't take their eyes off of you if you're risking something, if you're really exposing who you are, if you're really exposing who you are.
Yeah.
If you're being dangerous, that makes it riveting. People have taken that to mean I'm just going to be myself.
I see.
In whatever role I play.
Yeah. I see.
It's about me.
Yeah.
Rather than taking those personal experiences, those personal emotions, that raw emotion, and bringing it to the character.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, don't you think
that's... creating a character. American actors don't do that so much anymore.
Well, don't you think
some do.
Something...
Meryl Streep does.
She does.
There are certain actors who do. But for the most part, it's the British actors who do that.
I really love Jessica Chastain. I think she's
really
great.
Oh, she's fantastic.
And by the way, isn't she Juilliard trained or Yale?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, there's a group that does it. But there's also, I think, one of the things that it shows about, especially the American society right now, is there's kind of a pervasive narcissism.
Oh, kind of.
That is, you know, it's about, everything's about me. It's all about me, whether it is...
I call it a narcissistic purgatory.
Well, there you go. But it is. You
can't
are,
get away
so
from
when
it.
You're making everything about you, then the idea that you don't want to watch me is so strange. It's alien. Why would you not want to watch me just being me? So I don't have to study or do anything because just me is so amazing. And I think you don't see that in some of the foreign actors.
No.
Now, the question becomes then, bringing it back to what we do here, the question becomes, how do you get that same level of vulnerability that you've talked about that you need to really kind of establish to make something compelling when all you have to work with is your voice?
I find it easier.
Okay.
When all you have to work with is your voice, because you don't have to accommodate the camera. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You don't have that whole crew standing around you off camera. You don't have the boom man and the lighting guy and the makeup person and the camera coming in. All it's you and the microphone.
So it's more intimate.
It's so intimate. It's more of an internal dialogue that I have with the character.
Sure.
So in a booth, I can really let go. Whereas on camera, there's so much more that you have to accommodate.
I love that choice of words. Yeah.
So I find it very liberating. I find a sound room to be really liberating.
It is a very peaceful place.
It is. But it's so strange because one of the best overall scenes I've ever seen done in a recording room, you and I were doing the film Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, which was a wonderful film.
Great movie.
And I'm sitting in between you and Mark Hamill for a week. I just sat there going, just keep your mouth shut or you're going to get fired because you don't belong here. And you never looked at each other. Because you can't. You're staring at the microphone. Mm-hmm. And yet the scene between you and Mark, where he's being so familiar with her, hello, Batsy, and just being so, hi, Bruce. And it's so unbelievable. And then, if you've ever seen Mark Hamill work, for everybody out there who hasn't, he's devouring the microphone. He's an inch away, and he's just so passionate.
He spits a lot.
You
mentioned that. Like a Shakespearean actor. He spits a lot. And then there's you, who's taken this character that is now in his late 80s at this point. So you're trying to have that same kind of verve that you had when the first time the Joker and Batman faced off, but it's not there anymore. So there's that sense of the aged as well. And the two of you together, and I just sat back just going, I don't belong here. So there's that sense of it still being a stage play in voiceover that sometimes you don't get in television or on film. Mm-hmm. And it's so strange because in some ways you're so much more disconnected from your fellow actor in that you're not making eye contact. Mm-hmm. And yet just through the microphone, there mm-hmm. is that familiarity. It's so strange. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just so odd.
It is interesting because you're living through your voice and you're creating the character and you're creating the drama and you're creating the tension. And the other actor is doing the same thing, but you're not even looking at each other.
Yeah.
And there's this intimacy that develops, and it's only through the voice. It's really fascinating.
It's so strange. When you see, we're going to get into the fact that you are the only correct answer to who's the best Batman. We're going to get into that in a bit.
You say that to everybody.
It's true. But just to you and to me. If you
and to everybody
and to no, I'm saying listening who's on. The best Batman. I only say he is or I am. That's the only answer to those things.
I thought it was you. Now I think it's him.
No, it's always him. Right. He's the only correct answer.
I think it's him.
When you look at especially a Bruce Timm drawing of Batman or Bruce Wayne, do you see yourself?
Those are some hard hitting questions.
No. No, you don't really?
I don't see myself.
You don't?
I really see the character.
Okay. There's not a little bit of Kevin in there now?
I don't know. Maybe the jaw.
So then that's one of my questions.
Wait, no, come on. Well, you're not going to get off that. Do you see yourself in Ron?
Yes.
You do?
I do. I do. Because it's funny. It's one of the ways that I know I'm not doing the character properly mm-hmm. is if I can see the drawing or watch the show and I don't see myself.
Hmm. Okay.
And there's been several characters I've done where I'm like, I'm not hitting it because when I see it, I don't see me.
Yes,
and
I know
so
what you mean.
And so certain things where I can see myself. Ron is one of them. Terry, more than Batman, was one of them. But like when I did Guardians of the Galaxy, the first 15, 20 episodes, my register was too high for the animation and I didn't see myself in the character. And it was weird. It was off-putting to me. Mm-hmm. But going back to Connecticut.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
Because this then, I want to bring you to your childhood.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Yikes, that's a scary place to go.
Well, no, for one specific reason. Did you watch any animation, any cartoons? It wasn't even animation to us. It was just cartoons growing up.
I had never... Well, there wasn't a Batman cartoon.
Right, right. I mean, any cartoons.
There was Batman comics, though, right?
Comics.
Yeah.
I watched The Jetsons.
I loved The Jetsons.
Yogi Bear.
Okay.
I loved all
those. The Flintstones.
Okay.
I mean, all the stuff from the 60s.
Sure.
That was what I watched.
But were you a cartoon fan?
We were allowed a certain amount of TV. It was a pretty strict house.
Okay.
But yeah, I watched The Flintstones and The Jetsons. But I had no exposure to comic books.
Hmm.
We didn't have comic books. When I went into audition for Batman, Bruce Timm said, "What's your knowledge of Batman?" And I said, "Well, I know the Adam West show." And he said, no, that's not what we're doing. He said, "We love Adam, but that's not what we're doing." He said, "Didn't you ever read comic books when you were a kid? The Batmans?" I said, "Well, no, I didn't. We didn't have comic books." He said, "What kind of childhood did you have?"
Oh, geez, nice. Oh, man, I can see Bruce saying that too.
So you can hear him saying
You can hear Bruce saying
And so he is the one who introduced me. He said, "Oh, well, it's, you know, his parents were murdered in front of him as a child in Crime Alley. He's spent his life avenging their deaths. He's become this dual personality. He's a public face and a private face. And he's, he's living to avenge and to bring justice to the world." And I said, "Well, you're kind of telling the Hamlet story again.
Hmm.
It's very similar."
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, no one's made that analogy." So I said, "Well, let me just use my imagination." And so I just put myself in that scene in Crime Alley.
Had you already been in the voiceover world or the animation?
None.
Okay.
None. This is the first audition I ever went in on for a voiceover.
And you were a little reluctant. Were you reluctant?
Well, I
it says here yes, you were reluctant.
She's reading up the, it says well, reluctant, say, damn it.
Well, because actors, you know what it's like. You
oh,
go
yeah.
on 20 auditions and you don't get them.
Yeah.
So you become kind of casual about them. You think, "Do I really want to go to this one today?
Yeah.
I don't really want to go to this
well,
one
also,
today."
Well, also, I'm going to speak to the fact that I had done a lot of indie, I had done like this really high art Broadway show, and we were paid off to go like to, my mom and I went to pilot season with the money because we closed early, right? And I ended up getting a Disney job, and that was it. I just work for Disney for my whole teen years.
Wow.
But prior to that, I did a Woody Allen movie. I did a lot of more like indie New York stuff. Mm-hmm. And so actually, I'm going to mention her name, but because she knows it's okay now, but it's Jess DeChico, who's an amazing voice actress.
Yeah.
And she was a good friend of mine and is still. And I love her so much. And she was like, you sure you want to work for Disney? And I was like, yeah, why not? She's like, okay. You know, and I was, that's my guess, DeChico.
That's a pretty, it's an okay DeChico.
It's okay. It's an okay DeChico. I'm an okay DeChico on a, you know, on a good day. But yeah, I remembered having to make that choice and that leap into the unknown of something that was sort of wildly different than the training and experience that I had. You know, on the East Coast and the whole thing.
Yeah, I was totally going to blow it off because I thought, there's no way this is going to happen. Wow. Why am I bothering to go over
this
to
is
Warner
what, 88, 89?
91.
It was nine, okay.
Because we went into production in 92.
Okay.
I was going to blow it off because I thought, you know, this is going to be a complete waste of time. Put my energy into preparing the audition for tomorrow. That is for a pilot or something. You know, what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And I thought, I'll just go. What's the worst that can happen? I can make a fool of myself. Big deal. So it was a totally random audition that I did not think was going to lead to anything. But then as I started putting my imagination into the character in the booth and putting myself into that boy in that alley and what would happen to him and how he would compensate in life. And then my voice went to this place.
There it is.
And I started using this sound that I had never used before.
It just came out.
And they hired me on the spot.
That was it.
Of course. That's exactly what we want.
Of course. Of course that's what,
But it was totally improvised on the spot. Totally.
Magic.
No. I mean, to the point where I remember my dad, we were doing Beyond at the time, and something had happened where we were in New York, my father and you were in New York at the time, and we were waiting in the room to record something, and you were walking down the hallway, and you said hello to somebody, and you said in your voice, like, hey, Jack, how you doing? And my dad went, who is that? Because that voice, you have that voice. And it was like, that's Kevin. that's Kevin. So, again, we've talked about this. First audition ever for voiceover is Batman. It is completely Shakespearean when you actually think about the Batman character.
He's a totally Shakespearean character.
Ridiculous.
He has no superpowers. He can't fly. He can't see through walls. He's a tragic hero.
Yeah.
He is Orestes. He is Achilles. He is Edgar in Lear. I mean, he's so many of the roles that I had played. And so I just approached it that way.
So now I rewatched literally on Sunday on the plane home. I was just in Connecticut and I'm flying home. It was -8,000 degrees.
Don't miss that.
Batman the Animated Series is now on all the Delta
flights. I know. I'm so pleased.
And I was like, I'm starting over. And I went right to the pilot. And
the first line of the first episode of the first Batman series is, what was that?
Yeah. And wasn't that you too?
That was me.
That was you too.
I was a helicopter pilot.
Yeah, that was the coolest thing in the world. That was the coolest thing in the world. So I'm watching. And obviously, the animation has changed from that first episode quite a bit. The story's instantly compelling. And now, getting back into the world of VO, Batman the Animated Series changed the whole ballgame for animation.
It did.
All the way around. From the way they recorded it, to the way they animated it, to the way they produced it, to the way it was promoted,
to the way
television.
It was scored.
The
music.
That's a big
full
deal.
Symphony score.
It was.
They threw money at that show,
which is nuts.
Still
when you
shows.
Think about it.
Yeah, it still shows. It's why it still looks so rich and so fresh and compelling. And young people still get turned on to it.
Yeah.
I get approached at Comic Cons all the time by people say, I just started watching it. It's so cool.
His fans too. They love it.
They all go, oh man, you're here. Where's Kevin? And I'm like, hey, thanks. He's over there in the line. Or I will get this a lot. This is the best one. Like, I love Batman Beyond. Can you sign this for me, please? I'm like, yeah. Like, it's really great that you came over there. Like, yeah, Kevin's line was too long. I get that a lot too. Kevin's line's too long. I'm like, well, it's nice meeting
you.
Did you do voices at all growing up? Did you do voices of your own things that you read or have imaginary friends that you spoke to in different voices? Any of that stuff?
I had imaginary friends.
There we go.
Okay.
Oh, this sounds so weird.
Yes, do it. Yes.
Have you seen the title of the show? You're in a safe space. Come on now.
I actually grew up on Long Island.
Okay.
We moved to Westport when I was about 11. And when I was, it was a very working class community. And there were a couple of trees in the backyard, dogwood trees. Mm-hmm. And when the leaves fell, I would get very, very, very upset.
Oh, okay.
And my mother caught me outside on a chair with tape, putting the leaves back on the tree. That was the kind of affection that
That's
I had
so
for these trees.
Sweet, though.
I was trying to heal them because I couldn't figure out what was going on. And then she watched me and she saw me starting to talk and then stop and listen. And I was having a conversation with the trees.
With the trees? That's amazing.
That's pretty.
So my
pretty
first
poetic.
Imaginary friends were
for
the two trees in the backyard.
Do you remember what the conversation
no,
was?
No, I don't know what their names were or, you know, I don't know the personas that I put into them.
Sure.
But she said I would go out and have dialogue. She said she'd watch me and she thought, I hope there's nothing wrong with this child.
I think that's amazing. So you gave voices to the earth, essentially, which is pretty great.
But it was the loss of the leaves that moved me emotionally to them.
Yeah.
And then I developed this relationship with them. Oh, those incredible. Are my first voices.
That's beautiful.
That's pretty great, though.
Do you still love trees?
Oh, I'm a real outdoor person.
You are a real outdoor person, aren't you?
I love being outside. Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
So I was trying to think, you might have thought of this already because I can't, of literally, other than maybe a talk show host, any other actor in history who has played a role as long as you have. And I can't think of anyone. You've been Batman now in many iterations for
30 years. This is the 30th year.
30 years.
Have The Simpsons been on longer?
Maybe.
I think they might.
Maybe. Okay. So then they'd all be voice actors.
They might have me beat.
Essentially.
But you're right. It's up there.
But you'd be one of a handful of actors in history that have played a single character for as long as you have.
And what a character to play.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's so rich. There's so much always to find there.
Yeah.
You never get tired of playing him.
Oh, I mean, that's just wonderful to hear.
Oh, you don't. It's just, he's so damaged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what it compels people to him. Because we're all damaged.
Yeah.
And people read that into Batman. They relate that to Batman. It's his humanity. It's his flaws. That's what attracts people. They really are.
It's amazing.
People think of the heroic and the big, I am vengeance. They think of that as Batman. But it's really the flaws in him, I think, that really draw people in.
It's also what's recurring in any iteration of Batman, even live action that we're seeing, like with the Robert Pattinson one that's recently coming. And like everyone's their own Batman, but they're all damaged.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what anchors their performance.
Yeah,
but absolutely. Then there's also something very interesting. So I remember Bruce Timm saying something to me that was, we were talking about just the character Batman in general. And the thing that he told me that was very interesting is he said, there always needs to be a Batman for everyone. So he said, when the movies got very dark, the cartoons, the animated series got very light. So it was like Brave and the Bold came out and you saw it was more of a comedy side of Batman because the films got very dark. Mm-hmm. And then he said, when the films got very light, like the Schwarzenegger ones, we were doing Beyond and Batman, the animated series. So he said, Batman always needs to exist for everybody. So a 5-year-old can find their Batman and a 25-year-old can find their Batman.
That's awesome.
And I thought there was something very interesting about that as well, where it's just that character that has so many levels.
Yeah.
Where we both know Dietrich Bader very well,
yeah.
who came and sat down in front of the microphone and did a completely different, I mean, such a different Batman than you ever did. And one wasn't better or worse. They were just different.
Different.
It was just different just Batman. Different. Adam West, who was, you know, God rest him. I know you knew Adam West pretty well, right?
Yeah. There was a funny scene. He lived in Utah and I had been at some Comic-Con and I was changing planes at Salt Lake City Airport. And Adam was waiting for a plane at Salt Lake City Airport. We saw each other. And I was like, Adam. And he went, Kevin. So we sat down and we're talking to each other. And people started noticing, that's Batman and Batman.
You think?
So all the camera phones came out.
I'm sure.
And people started taking pictures. It was a Batman convention at Salt Lake Airport.
But I mean, how cool is that? Because again, two completely different versions
of this
character.
Different.
I mean, couldn't
wildly
be more different.
Couldn't be more different.
Unbelievable. So strange.
Yeah, he was a really nice, really nice man.
He was a very nice man.
So then you don't ever feel territorial over Batman as a whole, do you?
No, not at all. It's a you don't get to own the character. You get to sort of rent him for a while. You get to inhabit him for a while. Mm-hmm. And then someone else comes. You know, you don't.
You've been pretty close to owning the character. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest.
I love doing it.
Yeah, but I mean.
And I have a wonderful relationship with the audience.
Sure.
And the fans through the character.
But all of us other Batman are pretty much playing for second. I think we all know that.
Oh my gosh, that takes such, like,
But it's true. There's times where you just go. I mean, again, people always ask me, all right, Michael Keaton, Christian Bale, who's your Batman? And I always go, Kevin Conroy's Batman. Like, you know,
does.
For anybody who knows anything about animation or this world or is truly a Batman fan, this is how I look at it. Because you get a lot of people that are Batman fans when it comes to, like, the films. Like,
right.
But truly an all-around Batman fan, when you're reading the comic book, whose voice is in your head? Kevin's voice is in your head.
Yeah.
And I think, don't you hear that from most of the fans that say there, when I read anything, when I do anything, it's your voice.
Well,
that's in
I
head.
Hear that from the fans because they're talking to me.
Sure.
I mean, they're not going to come to me and say, oh, I hear, you know, Dietrich
Bader. They come
Bader.
To me and say, I hear Kevin Conroy. You're pretty good, but I hear Kevin Conroy. Maybe, I do too.
But
I
maybe
too.
They know how much you love him. This is like a known thing.
Well, I
think
it's, of course, well, we've talked about that many times too, where the Bruce and Terry relationship was kind of similar to yours and mine when it came to actually doing the show.
It was.
But it was so funny. You mentioned The Simpsons. Okay. So I couldn't think of another actor that has played a single role, owned a role for 30 years.
Yeah.
It's unusual.
Yeah, you
it's
think?
It's epic. I think, yeah, it's epic.
So your goals, we are going to get into...
And then the games came along.
Well, so that's what actually
the
where
Arkham
we were going
games.
Gonna, we were just going to jump
which
into a whole
which are just other thing. Amazing.
Now, how is that different in recording? That's what I want to know. How is that different than animation? Go, please,
it's
tell
like,
us.
It's like root canal. It is so different. Because you know that when you do a recording in the studio with the other actors... especially for Warner Brothers, everybody's there together and it's like doing a radio play.
Yeah.
You're all interacting. You have the other actor feeding you. You have Mark Hamill feeding you a line. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you not act response?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He just brings it out of you.
Yeah.
But when you go into do games, everything's got to be on its own track because of the way the games are played. Everything's on its own algorithm, you know? So they can't do people together. So everything's isolated. So you're in a room alone, a soundproof room, and you're creating the situation of the character, what does he want, what is he after, what's just happened, where are you going, and then keeping the voice alive, line by line by line by line by line, and they do them all one line at a time. So it's totally different.
Hundreds of cues, thousands of cues.
37,000 lines.
Come on.
In Arkham Knight. The third of the Arkham series, 37,000 lines. Because depending on how the games play,
there are literally
thousands of different things. There.
How long did that take you to record?
It took 2 years to record.
Oh my God.
And
4 hours at a time, alone, in a booth, you come out and you're just sweating. And then they give you an hour for lunch, and then you go in 4 hours more.
Wow.
And you're just keeping the drama alive in your head and keeping it straight. What's happened to him now? Where's he going? Did he just get in a fight? Is he, you know, all that stuff you're keeping alive in your own head. And it's exhausting. By the end of the day, you're just...
depleted.
You're depleted and you're exhausted.
Yeah.
And then they do that for about a week. Mm-hmm. And then you get a few weeks off while they're writing more stuff. And then they bring you in for another week.
That's really tough work. People, I think, assume that just because you're talking into a microphone that it's not hard work.
Yeah, you always hear that, well, you're a voiceover. You can come in your pajamas.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's that's somebody who's never actually done the work.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
No, building games is really hard work.
Is there one you prefer from an acting standpoint?
Arkham Knight, the third of the Arkham trilogy, I think is...
That one with the 37,000...
Yeah, because the end of it. I'm not going to give away the end, but Batman goes through this transition, this catharsis that was so challenging as an actor to do. You know, you like to be challenged by things like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of the way it came out. I was really, really happy with that one.
That's cool. So I don't think I've ever asked you this, and you can't say me because it's obviously the answer you would give, being that it's our podcast. And you can't say you. Who's your favorite Batman?
Oh boy.
Who's my favorite Batman?
Oh man.
This I'm not got sure
weird.
I've ever asked
I can't
you.
This say is gonna get me.
Weird. You can't say you. You can't say you, and you can't
really?
Say me either. Who would you of course you would.
No. Who would I who's it? I thought it was really crazy for Warner Brothers not to give the franchise to one person, the on-camera franchise.
Sure.
Because traditionally, that's what always happened.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have one person play a character.
Sure.
Do it, you know.
Like a James Bond kind of thing.
Like James Bond or Peter Sellers and,
sure.
you know, Clouseau. And there'd be certain, you know, the character would just do that franchise. So when Michael Keaton did the first of the Batman movies, I thought, well, he's nailed it.
Yeah.
He's got it.
Yeah.
And he's going to get the whole franchise because I love him as an actor. He's a brilliant actor.
He really is. I'm one so of my happy favorites.
He's
ever.
Such
back.
An amazing actor.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites ever. He really is.
And so I think it's impossible to pick one because they're all so different.
Yeah. They really
but
are.
But when I started
so
seeing
different.
The different characters,
yeah.
I mean, Ben Affleck is fantastic.
He was good.
Is he?
He's fantastic
he
in the
he
role.
He was good. Right. He was the best part of Batman versus Superman by far.
And Christian Bale is a little sketchy with his Batman voice, but as Bruce Wayne.
Great Bruce Wayne.
Phenomenal.
Great Bruce Wayne. Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
So everybody brings something different. And it's I realized after a while why they did that. It makes it so interesting to see what different actors bring
yeah.
to the role.
What,
but,
yeah.
but to be honest, Michael Keaton, I think if I had to pick one.
Yeah, I would probably pick agree hands down. Yeah.
Be
hands
Keaton.
Down.
I would
yeah.
have to agree. Now, don't you think that Batman, the animated series, is partially responsible for actors realizing that Batman and Bruce Wayne are two different characters?
Well, certainly that they should have two different voices and two different personas. That hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
And I asked Bruce if I could do that.
Yeah.
Because I said, wait a minute. Because I was so new to all this. I said, He's the richest man in Gotham. He's the most desirable bachelor. He owns half the city and he puts on a mask and no one knows it's him.
Yeah.
I said, seriously? That's stretching credulity to a ridiculous point.
Yeah.
Right.
I said, can I, you know, change the voice up a little bit? And so we decided my image was of a playboy, sophisticated, almost a David Niven kind of character. That's what I was visualizing.
Yeah.
And it just was a lighter register of my own voice. It was just slightly lighter and a little more ironic. It used a lot of irony, a lot of humor. I went a lot for the humor.
But you definitely, it was Batman and Bruce Wayne were two different people.
Yeah, they were different.
And that was never, I don't think that had ever really been done before or explored to that extent as it had in Batman the Animated Series.
They decided over time to have me tone it down because mm-hmm. when the artwork came back, the show was so dark. It was all painted on black.
Yeah.
It was the first time a show had been painted on a black background.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it was very dark.
Oh, wow.
And the music was so dramatic and the stories were so complicated. They said, you know, when you go to that light, ironic voice, it's a little too jarring. So they had me tone it down.
Okay.
They liked the distinction,
yeah.
but they just wanted it less so. So they actually, I went back and re-recorded the first few episodes.
Really?
There is quite a harmony involved in the, like you're saying, the music mixed with the actual animation to
yeah.
the voices. It kind of is all synergistic.
Really? Yeah.
Like with the characters that he and I were blessed to play, our characters were Kim and Rod.
Uh-huh.
We kind of massaged it over the first season of trying to find, so that, you know, when you've mentioned that, like sometimes if you watch some of your work, you're like, oh, I didn't do that right. I'm taking myself out of that character. It's not blending well. Like he can't see himself in that character.
And it's true. And it's one of those things where I don't know. I always thought about, because the exact opposite thing happened to me when I was doing Beyond, where they pulled back my gravel. Where Andrea would constantly say, you're getting too gravelly and too R. She'd say too piratey with the Batman voice.
I love that.
Because with Terry, it was, as a 17-year-old kid, when he went and put on the cowl, going, hey, stop. No, nobody was going to be afraid of him.
Uh-huh.
So it was interesting that we mirrored ourselves in that aspect
opposite
as well.
Ways.
They
yeah.
pulled you back from the higher register and they pulled me back from the lower register,
yeah.
which I thought was kind of fun. But again, I think anybody who knows animation or likes animation knows that Batman the Animated Series changed the whole ballgame.
Oh, definitely.
Changed the whole
ballgame. I lived through that too as a viewer, yeah. so I completely can
it became
that.
It was no longer a cartoon. It was an animated
series.
It
was a movement.
And that was yeah. huge.
Yeah. yeah, that's really interesting.
The actors they brought in. Everything about this show was extraordinary. I mean, going in every week was like an acting lesson, the people I got to work with. Mark Hamill, Roddy McDowall, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., Stacy Keach. I saw Stacy Keach's Hamlet when I was in high school.
Jeez.
Oh, I mean, I had always admired his work.
And that's Andrea.
And that's Andrea bringing just all these different actors, and she went way outside the traditional pool of voice actors. What she was, brought them in too.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what was the traditional reach of actors then? People off of certain types of
That's
shows?
A good question. Oh, what was the voiceover actor? Well, Andrea always referred to a lot of it as pukey. Do you remember that?
Oh, okay.
With like...
Well, there were some who would be pukey.
Not the
but
actors,
then,
but the acting the itself. Acting. Not necessarily the actors.
It was overly saccharine and overly cartoony
yeah.
was the term they used to
okay.
use. Don't be cartoony.
Yeah. Because, you know, like when she would always say that when somebody would come in and they'd, it was always newscasters. A newscaster would come in with something and they'd go, you know, and this just in Gotham. And she'd go, no. Like you're a newscaster. Say it just like you're an, and I remember sitting there going like, oh, that's what she means by pukey. Like, don't do a cartoon. Like it was, and she was, always had that down.
Pukey, that's so interesting.
And I think that it was real is the word I would use for Batman the Animated Series. It was real.
Yeah.
She brought in actors
Very
to act.
Realistic.
So if there was any voice character that you would want to do.
I'm doing it.
Is
it?
And it's not Batman. Again, you can't pick Batman.
Okay,
you have to pick something else besides Batman to do. Who would you do?
I don't know. Who? Betty.
Oh. Doing the
but
Joker.
But I don't have his laugh. I don't have his laugh.
I think in episode
But I have his sinister.
Yeah.
Yes, I could see that.
I've done actually a voice for a new animated show that hasn't been, I don't know what's happening with it, but he's very sinister.
Oh,
and it's really fun.
It's good to play a villain. You like after all these years.
I am also officially advocating for somebody to write an episode where Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy get to switch roles for one episode.
Oh, they did that with KP. Remember, we did the body switch. Yeah. So you guys should body switch.
I want to see Mark Hamill as Batman and Kevin Conroy as the Joker. I think that would be very, very cool.
His laugh is just
ridiculous,
otherworldly. I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, that was the thing is. So many people saw Star Wars and kind of went, oh, Mark Hamill, cute.
Well,
good.
That's what I knew of him from.
And then, but his actual acting.
He's a character actor.
And a ridiculously good one. It's
he's
insane.
Not a young leading man, which is what he was pigeonholed into because he was such a good looking guy.
With that haircut.
And with that haircut.
That tan skin.
Yeah.
But Mike.
He's a really good looking guy.
Oh, he is such
but
a good actor.
He's really a character actor. He's crazy.
And not only crazy, but insanely talented.
Yeah.
It's just watching that. All right. So we've come to a portion of our podcast here that makes us a little different than all the other podcasts out there. So while we're just starting, it's not fully interactive yet, but eventually we are going to be fully interactive. And kids, young adults, and even some adults are going to get to Skype in, come in, talk to their favorite voiceover actors. But more importantly, artists are going to send in pictures and have some of their favorite voiceover actors add voices to their characters.
Oh, wow.
So we have a stack here.
Oh.
That was sent.
Did you like some water?
Not to put you on the spot, but to completely put you on the spot.
I know.
We've had, for our first couple episodes, we've had some kids, some adults send in some pictures. So it's fun to put you on the spot, isn't it? This is the joy.
Flexing the muscles.
And we would like, would you like us to pick or would you like to pick?
Yeah, let me just.
Here we go. Is he picking at random?
Oh. It's up to you.
Okay.
We should let the guests.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's beautiful, that
Some
fish.
Great artists and some inspiring beautiful artists, fish. Certainly.
Oh, that one's
kind of
cool.
These are fun.
Again, imagine being a little kid and getting Kevin Conroy to put a voice to the character you've drawn.
These are fun.
These are fun.
Okay, I grabbed a couple.
You grabbed a couple?
Oh, you grabbed a couple.
That's awesome.
Okay, so this first one is a beautiful fish with, it almost looks like a very Disney-fied fish.
It does look like a Disney-fied fish.
It's a beautiful fish. This is from Sam.
Who created our logo here.
Oh, Sam, this is a beautiful fish.
Beautiful.
A beautiful fish. And Kevin Conroy grabbed your fish right out of the stack. So, okay, Kevin, you see that. An audition comes in front of you. We want Kevin Conroy to read for the part of Sam the fish.
This is my butterfly, and this is my favorite butterfly. This is my pet butterfly. I'm caressing my butterfly because fish love butterflies.
Oh. That's a great voice. That's a great voice for Sam the fish.
Oh.
And here we have a cat who's also from Sam.
He's portly, that cat.
I am a very portly cat. This is King Pussycat.
I am King Pussycat and I am Emperor for the day. Emperor for the day.
There you go. Look at that, Sam.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kevin Conroy just put voices to two of your characters. We got them both up there?
We do. We have this one now, too.
So much
King Pussycat and what was the fishy name?
Sam.
Sam.
Sam the fish.
Well, I think I like Sam. I really like Sam, a lot.
Sam and his butterfly. So, Kevin, what's next? What's next for you down the line?
This thing I just started doing that you never know what you can talk about.
Sure, I know. Yeah, yeah. Something awesome coming out.
It's by an Australian creator.
Okay.
Aborigine writer.
Oh, cool.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And then there was another one that I did a couple of episodes of that these are things that are waiting to be picked up. I never know what I'm allowed to say the names of.
Yeah. It's better to err on the side of caution and just say you've got some really cool stuff coming out, right?
Yeah, but then it sounds like you're just an actor lying to make it sound like you're working.
I do that all the time. Are you kidding? I do that all the time. I've got amazing things coming out.
I got some incredible stuff coming out.
You're not going to believe. I've got a podcast.
I got a pile of scripts this high at home. I don't know which one to pick.
I was in a, you know when you do the upfronts for the networks
sure.
when you're doing a TV show?
Yes.
And so they bring you into New York and you meet all the advertisers and everything. And I was doing one for a show that I was on with an actor. And I was doing interviews with him, and he literally said during the interview, I had a pile of scripts this high, and I picked this one off of the top, and I said, you know, this is a show I want to do. And I was thinking, what a load of crap. This guy was so excited to get that job.
Get a single audition.
And he's saying, I had a pile of scripts.
He actually says this
high. You love
when
actors hire.
Of course.
Lying actors.
Well, that's, or like, act, they just act. They just act. Actors acting.
Actors
oh,
acting.
Gosh. That's
actors
way,
being actors.
That's the way it is, isn't it?
That should be a podcast.
No,
sure
I don't want that to
actors
be
actors being actors.
And it's just a whole bunch of whispering into the camera about, so where did you find your motivation?
That's an NPR.
That's a, exactly.
Welcome to NPR. Welcome to
actors NPR. On actors.
Voices on acting.
So, again, we've now got Batman for 30 some odd years. Batman ain't going anywhere. You're constantly being cast as Batman because you're Batman. What would you like to see from the Batman character that maybe you haven't done yet? Is there any part of this character in 30 years that has not been explored that you'd like to see?
They've explored so much. I love it when his identity gets challenged. Those are scripts that I really get excited by. There was one called Perchance to Dream.
Oh, one of the best.
Where he gets drugged and he goes back into his childhood. And so I was Bruce Wayne. I was Batman. I was drugged to Batman. Then I was adolescent Bruce Wayne, and I was Thomas Wayne, the father. So yeah. I did five voices in that show that all had to be believably connected but distinct.
Sure.
But those kind of, because it's the psychology of the character that makes him so interesting.
Yeah.
So any of the ones that challenge that, I love. Like at the end of Arkham Knight,
yeah.
the game,
yeah.
That's what happens to him. He gets, his identity gets challenged. So I love it when that happens.
It does. It seems like kind of the toughest fights ever for Batman are really the fights Bruce Wayne has to do against himself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which is kind of the cool thing with the character.
I have a great big collection of cells. I've been collecting them all the time I've been doing the show. So I've got like 60 or 70 cells.
So cool. Wow.
And one of them is Batman struggling with Bruce Wayne.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's cool.
Isn't that cool?
That's
cool.
Very cool.
That's cool.
I love that image.
Do you now, I've got to ask, do you sign your own cells to make them worth more?
Yes.
Of course. You have to. I do the same thing. It's like, this is the greatest thing. I'm going to hang it on my wall. Two will. How do you not?
But I started collecting other ones like Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera and
You're still
Disney.
Talking Andre Romano.
Yeah,
Looney Tunes, Hanna-Barbera.
She's got probably got a really great cell collection. That's like the original NFT.
Yeah. I got a lot of Pinky in the Brain. I've got a Carrot Blanca.
Oh,
cells.
Come on.
It's a classic.
I don't know that one.
It's a Looney Tunes where Bugs Bunny plays
it's
Sam.
The, yeah.
From Casablanca.
Yeah.
It's a spoof on Casablanca.
But he's a carrot, right?
And he's a rabbit.
I know what you're
rabbit.
Talking about.
Where he's, I'm thinking Bugs of Bunny. The one where he's the carrot one.
And Tweety Bird is Sidney Greenstreet.
Oh, jeez.
They're incredible. They're great cells. And it's a classic. So I've got some great cells.
Is that your nerddom? Like if you pick a nerddom, is it kind of animation history?
It's becoming so.
Yeah,
I knew nothing about it when I got into it. Mark is the maven about animation history. He can tell you
everything.
The episode number of the obscure show and what color the cape was. You know, I mean, he knows everything about animation. It's amazing.
Well, you can tell, you can see it in his passion. Yeah. But you, I mean, again, it was honored enough to sit next to you for many years at the microphone and to see the passion is.
Honestly, I'm honored that you were here today. Thank you so much.
This is great, coming in.
This
good luck huge. With this.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
This is, by the way, your none of this podcast. Has been recorded.
No, I don't think.
This was all a rehearsal.
This is a rehearsal. Yeah. We were going to shoot the rehearsal, but decided against it. we are going to be doing it, we're going to do it live next time. It's going to be great.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. God, thank you so much for coming in. You were by far one of my favorite people in the world.
You're mine too now.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
I've adopted you too.
Yeah, well, nobody has helped me more.
We Yankees.
No, he's my mentor now. Sorry, he's not yours anymore.
You don't get to. You don't get
we Yankees have to stick together.
We do.
That's true. We're all from
us
Connecticut.
Nutmeggers
okay.
have to stick Connecticut together because it's important. Yeah. So Milford, Westport, Avon, representing.
Okay, so Kevin.
In the con world, you kind of sometimes don't know where you're going until you land.
So I'm going to Dubai.
Oh my goodness.
Nice.
That's cool.
But that's in like 3 weeks.
Have you been there before?
Never.
That's
going to
be
a fun trip.
Crazy.
That's going to be a fun trip.
I'm going to Wales.
With me. I'll see you there, yeah.
And I've got a bunch of them lined up domestically, and I just don't remember
what's Well, what's your Google? Where would we find you on social media?
I am on Twitter.
Okay.
Real Kevin Conroy.
Okay.
So please check out the site.
You're also on Cameo, too.
And I'm on Cameo. I do Cameos.
Yeah, so make sure to hit Kevin up on Cameo as well.
The Cameo experience has been fascinating.
How's that?
Much more fan interactive than I thought. And interesting over the last 2 years how it's changed during the pandemic.
Isn't it?
My cameos went from happy birthday, happy graduation, happy anniversary, and then they gradually started morphing into hang in there.
Pep
we're
talks.
Gonna get
health,
through
pep
this.
Talks. Yeah.
You know, you're not alone.
Yep. Yeah.
We're in this together.
That's true.
It's dramatic how it's changed.
And people just need that. And that's why
they really do.
So important.
People are reaching out to each other so much more now because we've all been so isolated.
Yeah.
So it's been a really extraordinary experience and kind of a privilege to provide a service like that during this period. But there were a lot of them like that.
Yeah. But that's good though. So we can, if you want something personalized from Kevin, hit him up on Cameo.
Cameo.
And then come to a convention and you'll find him at Real Kevin Conroy.
Real Kevin Conroy.
You may have to wait a little bit.
For what?
Because his line is so
big. I have nice lines.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You're going to have to sit. Bring a sandwich.
Bring a snack.
Bring a sandwich.
And a pillow.
Because it's going to be, or just come see me in the meantime. Because that's what's
going on.
Kevin's line was too long. You hear that quite a bit. Kevin Conroy, thank you so much.
Guys.
Again.
Thanks for including me.
We love you.
The only answer to who's the best Batman, Kevin Conroy.
I am vengeance. I am the knight. I am Batman.
Woohoo!
Cannot end on anything better than that. Thanks, everybody.
I Hear Voices is hosted by Wilfred L. and Christy Carlson Romano. Produced by Elizabeth Joy Windham and executive produced by Brendan Rooney and Wilfred L. Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham, and our video editor is Eduardo Gamba. And that was my announcer voice.
Some side effects of listening to I Hear Voices are sore abs from hilarity, falling down the Cocomelon rabbit hole, sneezing due to mass nostalgia, and hugs.
Follow I Hear Voices wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss any of the amazing voices.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at I Hear Voices Podcast. To see the video stream, subscribe to my YouTube channel.
You can also check us out on MySpace, Omegle, Vine, LimeWire, AIM, and Napster.
Okay, Will, let's teach you about the internet.
The what?